Welcome to another episode of Small School Big Tech. This is Danny Silva, IT Jag on Twitter, along with
Andrew Schwab, another Schwab on Twitter. I get to say my own name.
Hey, look at that. And we're back for 22.
This has to be a record back-to-back podcasts
week. No, we had one doubled in one on 2 days.
Oh, that's days. True. Oh, yeah, that was the fiasco in the car.
Yeah.
What episode was that? I forget.
Three or four ago.
Yeah. Go check that one out. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So,
only kind of. So what do we got today?
Andrew just came back from a visit a couple days ago from a one-to-one school with iPads.
I know.
How was that?
It was very neat. This is becoming a habit. I'm going to visit all these schools that are one-to-one and we're not, but, Avery Middle School, I will post a link to their site. They have decided that, I guess they made a decision pretty quickly at the start of the school year, actually, that they were going to go one-to-one, and they decided to go with iPads. And they've gone one-to-one with their eighth graders. So every eighth grader has an iPad that they actually check out and take home. And they have mobile carts for seventh grade, and then they have an iPad lab. If you can believe it, they actually have an iPad lab for sixth graders. And it was funny, the lab, we walked into it, and all you see are the little keyboards, the iPad keyboard docks on the desks. No wires, nowhere to plug in, no nothing, just these keyboards sitting on the desk. And all the iPads were actually on the table charging. So, but, you know, it's funny, it's my second visit to a one-to-one school. Or the second one-to-one school I visited. And I saw the same stuff that I saw up in Minarets, which is the students are engaged. They are actually self-directed learning is going on in the class, small group work. Teachers are teaching from the back of the room. They're using the internet, and so they're pulling in all these resources from outside instead of just sticking to a textbook. Students are excited, not necessarily really about the content, but they're excited about the tool and the applications. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I saw with the iPads, was that the applications really allowed students to kind of just take off with it. You know, they said,
okay, well, I was just going to ask you, one-to-one, but it was only for one grade level, right?
Correct. And I'm going to look up, I think it's Michael Wells is their IT guy who was kind of behind this.
So one-to-one for one school. And then they had labs, iPad labs.
Yes, pay attention, Danny. So one-to-one for the eighth grade, so about 100 iPads. And then they had iPad carts, and I don't know if it was one or two. It's a small school. I think they had 200 and some odd kids. So one-to-one at eighth grade, carts in seventh grade, and a lab in sixth grade. Okay, so they're using them in three different ways. The most effective and probably the coolest was obviously the one-to-one where the kids all have them. And I should point out that in combination with the iPad, I can hear you typing, by the way. In combination with the iPad,
I can't hear a thing with these headphones on.
Yeah, well, turn off the noise canceling button. In combination with the iPad were the apps. And I think they really had a big investment in apps. Michael Wells said he had like 40 apps on there. And it was interesting that they really didn't do much professional development. Oh, and the other thing I was going to say is that they built all of this student interaction around a wiki. So every teacher has a wiki. So they can all go, like when the students are in class, the teacher basically says, go to the in-class link. And all the resources they need that they've pulled in from the internet are available to them on that link. So it's just interesting to see the similarities between a one-to-one. I'm not sure that the device really matters that much, although I think the iPad is intuitive and kids pick up on it. Teachers picked up on it. So it is very interesting and intriguing device for that. But, you know, there's the cost, obviously, which in California right now is a big challenge. It's unfortunate though. I think this is the future. I mean, we want to do differentiated instruction. One of the things that one of the teachers said, which was really cool, was that because every student has a device and they have their work to do, she can now move around the room. And the kids who need help, she can help individually. Basically, kids are moving at their own, you know, they're moving through the material at their own pace. And they also, the kids that are, you know, the high-level kids are moving and can go further. So it is true differentiated instruction. And we talk about that word a lot, but I don't know. I mean, I think this helps make it a reality. And you've kind of seen that in your class, moving to computers. I see it in my class with having everybody on a computer. But I think having a device that the student owns, or not owns, but they're responsible for and can take home, just adds another level to that.
Of course. So, and it just, well, the engagement from the students is probably the biggest thing, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely engaged. You know, every student we saw there was either working, you know, they were turning around in their seats, showing their friends what they were doing. We had some great student presentations with, like, you know, narrated screencasts that they had done on their iPad. And so it was really neat to see the kids excited about using the iPads. You know, there were some anecdotal stuff, which you'd pretty much expect. It's a great motivator, because if you come in and you say, give me your iPad for the day, that's a pretty good motivator to get a student on track and keep them doing what they're supposed to be doing. One interesting thing that Michael told us was that their broadband penetration at home, I think they thought was actually lower than it actually was. I think they said it turned out to be around 80%. But the families that didn't have internet, once the iPad came home, went out and got internet for the most part.
So the parents bought in.
Yeah, the parents bought in big time. And that's another thing. They said they had community meetings, and they, you know, obviously the board was behind it, and they did some interesting stuff financially with financing it through facilities as a facilities upgrade. And also they skipped an ELA textbook adoption, or English language textbook adoption, and funded the iPads through that as well. So I think they've really taken a leap. The principal was really excited about it, and students were excited. Veteran teachers, there was a teacher there who was getting ready to retire next year, and she said, what a great way to go out, because she was having a blast with it. So,
that's good to hear that the veterans are buying in too.
Yeah, the special ed teacher talked to us. She was real excited about how her kids were now interacting and how they were their writing had improved significantly. One funny thing is we walked into the sixth grade lab, which was, it was a typing lab, basically. The teacher wanted the 2 weeks of typing at the beginning of the class. Sounds familiar, right? But
yeah.
What they said was that, they gave them the keyboards and they were typing on the keyboards, but the students actually like to type on the virtual keyboard more than the physical dot keyboard, and were actually pretty good at it. And if you think of middle school students, the size is probably about right for them. You know, same thing with the netbook. So anyway, it was just, you know, I mean, it's like you walk into a school like that and you see the future, and you come back to your school and you want to know, how do we make that happen? And I think you know, they've done it through being really creative in the financing, really open to taking a risk. And one of the things that I was thinking about that probably allows them to do that is, and this is a California thing, but they're an 850 school, right? So they're a really high-performing school. So they can this is my personal opinion, is that they can afford to take the risk and spend the time on this, and because they don't have to worry about improving test scores next year to get out of program improvement. Right, that's not their focus. Their focus is on learning and the kids.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, you know, if somebody wants to fix education, I'd say just give every kid a device that's connected to the internet and see how much they can learn on their own.
yeah, but where would all the teachers go, right?
onto the internet.
Well, that's kind of like...
And doesn't that segue into what we've been doing lately? I mean...
Well, yeah, and this goes back, way back. This is probably 2 or 3 years old, this video, but was the guy, I think it was India, he put a wall up. There was a wall and he put a computer on the other side of the wall or something like that, and the kids could use the computer, but there's only one computer, and the kids were teaching each other from that one computer.
Yeah, and then he's done research, and there's a TED Talk on it, and maybe if I can, I'll find the link and post it in the show notes. But, yeah, I mean, that's awesome, right? He takes a computer, he builds it's like he sticks it in the poorest slums in India and lets kids interact with it. And, you know, kids, one kid will figure it out, and then there's a whole bunch of kids around him, and then they're teaching each other and learning from each other. And it really was, you know, it's an interesting thing. What does it take to learn, you know?
Well, and I'm not going maybe that extreme in my class, but I'm using simple web tools, and they're, the kids are teaching themselves. You know, I tell them, I've used it a couple of times, but you guys need to learn how to use it. And they're teaching me things, and they're teaching each other things. And that's kind of the exact same process.
Right.
Right. They're learning how to learn.
Mm-hmm. And that's how they learn natively anyway. Right. I mean, this is
exactly,
how you learn.
Exactly.
You figure something out, you show it to your friend, and they, you know, I mean, it's, you know, we've institutionalized learning.
How do you think they get all the proxies all the time?
Yeah, exactly. or figure out how to get their phone on Wi-Fi.
Well, and that I'm going to go ahead and switch topics here, but that kind of segues into the next thing that's on our list. And
is it a Google thing?
No, it's not a Google thing. Oh. That comes later. We talked last episode about Animoto Education Accounts changing up their policies a little bit. And that policy was 50 limits, correct?
Yeah, so now if you register, you get a code that's good for 50 registrations for students. Before it was, I think, unlimited, but there was a time limit on how long you could register with
the code.
Lasted. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
So Glogster has had that for a while too, but now GoAnimate, which my kids love, has an education accounts. And we put the link in the show notes along with Animoto. And it's a real nice interface. I still haven't messed with the uploading students. I don't know if that's going to be simple or not.
So they actually created a school interface for teachers?
You get an admin panel for your school.
Oh.
And then...
It doesn't happen to integrate with Google Apps, does it?
I don't think it's going to work that way at all. Because you get a teacher, you get an admin user, you get a teacher user, and then you get 100 student accounts, which for an elementary school, that's wonderful.
So this would be 100 student accounts for the entire school.
For the entire school. This is the free version.
Maybe we should back up and say, what exactly is GoAnimate?
GoAnimate is an animation program, very simple, pretty intuitive for the students to learn. Not as complicated as, say, Pencil or I can't think of the other one right now off the top of my head. DoInk, where they have to actually draw. This has pre-built characters with pre-built animations, if you will, and you put them in sequence and you tell them what to do, like walk and move or talk. They're really cool. The free education version and the free accounts are limited to 2-minute videos, which for a student, 2 minutes isn't that bad. But the 100 student limit for the free version is kind of a horrible. Also with the free version, you only get one teacher account.
So only one teacher can use it?
You cannot add any more teachers than the one teacher account.
All right, so how much does the paid version cost?
And this is where I'm a little bit unsure, because if you go to the website, it's goanimateforschools.com with the number 4, and it says for free for up to 100 accounts, but... It says $12 per use or per account. Well, does that mean $12 per teacher account, $12 per administration account, $12 per school account, or $12 per student?
Let me guess. I'm going to guess $12 per student.
I'm guessing $12 per student as well, but the website doesn't make it clear. You get between the free version and the paid version, there's only one paid version, but you basically go from very limited to almost completely unlimited. The nice thing about the free version, though, is the students get certain account, and the teacher gets a different type of account. So the teacher has more rights than the students. So like a teacher can upload an SWF and import it into the actual animation where students can't, things like that, which in one way that's good, but in another way that's bad, I guess. The teacher gets more cartoon people, if you will, characters. Mm-hmm. Students are limited to couples. Teachers get like five. But I really like GoAnimate. I'm going to try to use it. And we talked about how we're going to try to get around this with Animoto. You just create a secondary account. So I'll see if how well they're looking at
what?
School names.
Just pay for how many kids do you have?
Oh, yeah. I have 150 students. There 150.
150 so times 12. Well, let me do the math. I got to cheat. I need a calculator. 150 times 12.
That'd be 180.
Oh, you can do math in your head. Yes. Yeah, that's nothing. Every year? Come on. You got that. It's like pocket change.
Yeah, and actually, it starts at $12 per account per year. That's what it says. So we'll see. The cool thing is, Google fanboy here, they had a Google form to actually fill out to register. So I thought that was kind of cool.
All right. Well, I guess it's worth checking out. I mean, free is good, and obviously you're not going to get everything without paying something. And actually, I am encouraged by this because what it means is they actually have a business model, and they might not just disappear.
Well, and that's true because GoAnimate has always had a paid version. In fact, just to download, you can embed and you can link to the videos or the little animations, no problem. But if you want to download it and do anything with it on your desktop, like edit it or put it into another video, you actually have to pay for in the free version. So they do have a business model. I think they've been around for a while. We'll see. I think it's a good website.
Right. We have a lot of free tools that we recommend and that we use, and you just don't want to see it go the route, the way of Ning, where one day it's free and then the next day you either got to pay for it or it just disappears altogether. And I can't remember what just disappeared, but something.
Well, and that's the great thing about they already have a paid model.
Right.
So unless they up the price or take away the free version, which I doubt, I think they have a good plan going. Ooh. Somebody did talk to me though, and they sent me a DM asking, they would like to know what I'd be willing to pay for and what they would rather see for free. What I would like to see for free. I think if they want to keep the limitations on what the students can do, that would be wonderful. But I would say don't limit the amount of students we can let use this, because I think they're only hurting themselves. If you had a whole school of 500 kids using it and they couldn't get enough out of the free version, what's the school probably going to think about doing? Opening it up and maybe purchasing it.
I think you're limiting future customers, right? Because some percentage of those students might actually pay for it at some point. Although, we could have a whole debate about what students expect to pay for and what they don't.
That's a whole other issue.
But, I think it's nice that they asked you. If you look at the extra normal model, actually for everybody who's not on Twitter, when Danny says DM, he means direct message, which means he got a private message that nobody else can see. So I think it's like the extra normal model is what I would prefer, which is anybody can create an account. You're just limited in what you can do. My issue with extra normal always was they would change what you could do and what you couldn't and what characters you had available and what ad. That's just,
they upgrade quite a bit and they change quite a bit. These websites usually stay pretty simple.
Right.
The nice thing is like Animoto adds features, but they don't take old features away.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way kind of GoAnimate's been working. Glogster, I think, has been working that exact same way. Mm-hmm. But again, I'd rather keep the limitations on what the kids can do for the free model, but don't limit the number of students, and then I think they're going to be better off. And it wasn't GoAnimate didn't contact me; it was actually another teacher.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't know if they're doing a research paper or not,
Well, you got to tell them you'd be willing to pay $1 per kid.
Dollar per kid, yeah.
And then all those dollars are going to add up for all these services.
It would.
All right. Speaking of adding up, so 3 million Google ebooks. Wait, I just said Google.
Yes, you did. Hey, you did the Google part.
3 million Google ebooks from your choice of booksellers and devices. Now, it's Google, so I haven't looked at this, but I'm assuming this has something to do with being able to read ebooks on the web.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you've used Google Books before, which I know you have, but our audience, Google Books, it's basically a Google Books with a front end of store.
So they're actually going to start selling books?
Yes.
And I think the thing that I'm most excited about, and actually I could roll in some Kindle stuff here, but is being able to read books on the web in a web browser. And I think this ties into the Google Chrome OS launch or news. But up until now, you've pretty much needed an app, right, to read an ebook.
Yeah.
And especially for us with our Linux netbooks, that's an issue. So if we can get ebooks on the web through any browser, now we're kind of platform agnostic, which is cool. And I think Kindle actually is coming out with a web-based ebook.
Is Mark Twain open source?
Or out of...
I mean public domain.
Domain? I believe so.
So I just did a search for Mark Twain, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and it is free, and it gives me a free big free button. It looks just like the Google ebooks. Here, I'll let you see my screen even.
I don't want to see your screen.
And then you don't have to look at me. And it says free, get it now. And so then it downloads. And what I'm kind of excited about is, I don't know when I was talking about it, but I was thinking, wouldn't it be great if I could take and put an ebook or an EPUB into Google Docs? Well, I tried it, and Google Docs does not accept EPUB. But now with Google Books and the web store, I can just read it for free through Google. I wonder how that's going to work out, because now we're crossing over and we're getting the books into Google Docs and everything, because it's part of your account. I think this is going to be a good thing.
Dude, it's just it's a web page with, I can turn pages and go through. It's actually pretty cool.
Well, and then I don't know if you've installed, and I'm jumping ahead, but I don't know if you've installed the web store or checked out the web store for Chrome OS.
Yes, like that's the first thing I do when Google makes an announcement is run home and install it.
Well, it's automatically installed because it comes with Chrome.
Yeah. How do I get to it? Oh, I'm in Firefox. Oops, sorry.
Oops. Well, if you're in Chrome and you have the latest version, which is 8 something, and you press the new tab, it should be there waiting for you. If not, do a search for Google Chrome Web Store and it'll pop up. But there's a Google ebook web app, and it plays the books. It shows you all the books you own, and I'm showing it to you right now. It looks just like this. And read now.
Yeah, no, I was just in it. It looks the same in Firefox.
Yeah, so it is for those of you who can't see, I just popped open a Alice in Wonderland, and I'm flipping through the pages. And it's basically the scan book. Actually, real good quality. And
yeah, no, it's cool. It was funny because one thing that they set up at Avery was when they went to look in and see what books they were actually teaching, none of the books they were teaching were public domain.
Of course not.
Right, or available in EPUB, I think was what it was. So,
but the nice thing with iPad is you can use PDF versions if you can get that.
Yeah, if you can get those. I mean, that's I think the being able to get them is the issue, right?
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm kind of interested to see how this plays out for education. We'll see if maybe we can get something going on, the publishers for educational books.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure they're working on this. I mean, they have to know this is where things are going. I'm just curious if they're going to try to go for the subscription model. Thank you for stopping the screen share. If they're going to go for the subscription model where we have to pay per book per year, which is...
Or just
outright, you buy an electronic copy. And, I mean, I think it would be great if we could all get behind something like ck12.org, which is open source textbooks that are free and don't cost anything and aligned to standards. That, to me, is like the holy grail of education textbooks.
And well, the one thing about CK-12 is it's not publicized right now. It's not being. But what if you sat down and created a great computer systems book through CK-12? And
because it is a publishing platform, it's not just
and you published it to the ebook store for Google.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have a huge audience, and I mean, you're not making any money, but everybody's got it available.
Well, and I probably could. That was one of the things that I found interesting from the CK12.org presentation that they came and gave at our county was it is a platform, and they are perfectly okay, I believe. I think they're encouraging everyone to contribute open source content so that it's freely distributable. But because it is a platform and a technology platform that is basically designed to make it easy to create books, there's nothing that says they can't go to a publisher and say, here's our platform, you know, create textbooks with it. And then have the publisher actually charge for those textbooks. So what I would like to see, though, is really like this, the freemium model enter the textbook world, where you get the base textbook with all the material or all the content for free, but then the extras are what you're going to pay for.
The stuff they put the extra time and money into.
Yeah, like multimedia or
web videos and stuff like that. Yeah, that would be cool. So I just tweeted a screenshot of us.
Hey, you can't tweet on the show live. What's up with that?
And I was using Sketch 1.0.
What is Sketch? Please tell me what this is. I do not know.
If you haven't used Sketch, Sketch is a lot like Snagit or Jing.
It's screen capture.
It's a screen capture software. Really cool. I would say it's real close to Snagit. It doesn't do video, I believe. I'm using a lot of ums today. Sorry.
I'm not editing them out either. You're just going to sound ummy.
So Sketch.
Wow, cool.
The one thing I like about Sketch is it gives you a lot better shadows than Snagit. If I could ask for one thing better on Snagit is the shadowing effects. Sketch photos seem to float on a page. Snagit photos seem to embed in a page like they're almost lifting off the page. I don't know. It's a personal preference. I've used it quite a bit for doing some stuff for presentations. The other thing is I put up on the show notes is Google – or not Google. Hey, I got Google on the brain. Camtasia for Studio.
What a surprise.
You can go to TechSmith and get a lot of free graphics.
Mm.
And they're actually really cool, like intro shots or pages where you could put up notes or something.
Mm-hmm.
If you check it out, and actually they have it's different media, so they have some sound files as well.
I'll have to check that out. That
check those
cool.
Both out. Skits Camtasia Studio is for Windows only, so those free graphics and media are going to work install easily in PC. I know Jim Sill, Mr. Sill on Twitter, he got it to work in Mac, but he kind of had to hack around to get them to install and get them to be able to be used. And then Sketch is only a Mac product. So
only Mac? Wait, what are you telling me, Danny?
You're using a PC or Linux, you're not going to
have
Sketch
luck?
Isn't for you. Yeah.
What is this with all the Mac stuff? When did you go to the dark side? Where's the Chrome?
You were just talking about iPad training.
Yeah. Where's the Chrome OS stuff? Come on.
Chrome OS, hey, that's at the bottom of our list.
Oh, sorry, I'm jumping ahead. All right, enough.
I saved the big time stuff for last.
All right, I know you want to get to something Google, so let's move on.
Well, this is kind of Google because it's tied to Google Voice, but go to send a call from Santa.com, and it's using Google Voice, and you put in a few things like the name of the person you want to talk to, send it to, your name, and they just ask you funny questions, and then you say call, and it will call the person with this actor playing Santa, and he says it's really well done, and the way they've intertwined with the questions they ask you, you're kind of like wondering what's going to happen. And it's hilarious once it's done. Good for little kids. Good to mess around with adults either.
Well, so is it like they get to call Santa, or what is it?
No, it's Santa calling them saying, you've been a good boy or whatever, and I hear you want a toy, and Santa is going to stop at your place first, and he's going to, right after he finishes feeding the reindeers, or you can choose what he wants to, what you get to choose quite a bit of different variations in what he wants to say. But
I was going
to
say, Santa's not bringing you a present today. That'd just
cool
be
stuff.
Mean.
Cool stuff.
Yeah,
check it out.
Using Google Voice, whatever. All right, what's next? What's this? You skipped something. Are we skipping something?
Oh, I skipped something. Yeah. Shape connectors. So if you've used, I'm trying to think of the
terms. It's Visio. Oh, shape connectors. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's like Visio for Google Drawings in Google Docs. So you can make
flow charts and all that?
Flow charts and then embed them in a Google Doc or a spreadsheet.
That's what I want to spend my weekends doing, making flow charts.
Yeah. Love that. Just wanted to throw that out there. And then, if anybody is willing to fly to Australia, Google Teacher Academy for Australia is announced. I doubt there'll be too many people from the United States going to that one.
Well, it's a plane ticket, but there's probably 50 people in Australia
they'll probably pick up from around the
Pacific Rim and all that.
The Pacific Rim, yeah. We'll see who gets to go and see what happens. That's, I believe, March. So, but applications are open now if you want to apply.
No, thank you.
Okay, now we're in the Google Chrome for you.
Oh, and you started with the speed test. What's that about?
Have you watched that video?
No.
Okay, so...
I do not run home and watch all the Google video stuff.
It's just a fun little video.
I know Chrome is fast.
They do little experiments, and they did a nice job with the video with slow-mos and everything, really super slow-mos. And they're dropping something to do a mouse click and something else at the same time. So like one was they actually make a potato gun and shoot a potato gun across the screen.
Really?
And so the mouse click, by the time the mouse clicks and the potato gun goes off, the screen page loads before the potato flies across the screen. Things like that.
Wow.
Or they do sound waves. You just have to watch the video. It's pretty funny.
No, it sounds cool.
But that brings us to the Chrome OS and the Chrome Notebook. Are you ready for one?
Sure. Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think it's going to be worth it?
Yeah, hold on a second. Let me check my audio.
Okay, so Chrome OS and the Chrome Notebook, they had the big hour-long, it was probably like 42 minutes like all the other ones, press conference.
Yep.
And Chrome OS, they started off with a lot of Chrome OS stuff, a lot of cool new features in Chrome OS, but that's all, or not Chrome, just Chrome. Then that basically applies to Chrome OS because that's what it is. The Chrome OS is just the Chrome browser.
Right.
With the Chrome Web Store.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of cool features. I think they said it was 60 seconds from launch to being able to be using the browser. They said a lot of times the limitation in the speed was actually the typing of the individual's hand was the limiting factor in how fast the notebook could go, which I would have to disagree because in my case, it would be my internet connection.
Yeah, well, you don't even have an internet connection, really.
So
it doesn't even count. Satellite is not internet.
But then they...
But it has offline mode, right? So it's not just...
Mode.
It's not just...
And
you don't have to be connected, basically.
Well, 4G, I guess, with Verizon. So they have.
Well, that was the really interesting part for me was built-in 100 megabytes. It's not a lot, but it comes included. So you get 100 megabytes through Verizon every month, which means I think they're recognizing that.
I didn't catch that. So 100 megabytes a month
of data.
You get for free if you buy the netbook.
Yeah, through Verizon
or notebook. It's a 12-inch
screen, notebook.
So it's
yeah.
A notebook.
Yeah,
that's cool because it's a pay-as-you-go model. I heard that.
Right, and if you go over the 100 megabytes, I think it was like $9 for a gig or something.
Yeah, you could pay either for a month or you could pay for data.
Yeah,
I think there was two models, which is cool. That's actually kind of nice. The other thing was I loved how fast it came back from sleep.
Mm-hmm.
and it was instant connection back.
Oh, well, let me go back to the iPad thing, too. That was another thing with the iPads, instant on, right?
Yeah.
Always just easy, available, and I think that's a big part of it. Jim Klein with the UberMix has gotten us close with the netbooks.
Yeah.
They do come back pretty fast, and they boot pretty fast, too, which is good. You have to have that in the classroom. I don't think people who haven't been in the classroom really don't understand this. You can't wait 3 minutes to log in.
Well, and I don't think Google's coming at it from a classroom perspective.
No, I mean, they're just going for speed, which is good. But I'm saying we're going to get the benefit.
But I think 60 seconds to full boot to usable
now, did they, actually was access. That full boot, or were they talking about configuring it for the first time?
I'm not sure if that was configured. I think that was cold boot. That was from a shut-off laptop to boot.
60 seconds seems like a long time to me, but maybe I'm just smoking crack.
It does seem like a long time. Never mind. 6 seconds, not 60 seconds. Maybe it's 6 seconds.
All right. We'll have to look it up.
6 seconds is a lot better.
Did you apply for the trial?
I did apply, and I put the application on. Actually, I have not applied yet because that is you have to film a video.
No, video's optional, buddy.
It was optional?
Yeah, little quotes or little brackets says optional.
I didn't go all the way down to the bottom. To the
well, I filled out 4 different ones for 4 different people on their behalf. So
I see. Did you fill out the short version or the long version?
I think I filled out both.
So
sorry, Google.
There's a little secret one that I found that was a short version. It had like 10 lines compared to the 50-line real application.
Yeah, that's probably the good one. But you know, I tweeted out a link yesterday. I got the short version link in Chrome. It popped up at the top. It said, apply for a netbook. Or
so
do you want to?
You were a special character.
I don't know how that happened. Well, I am a character, but.
Maybe they're just randomly, because I've never seen it. Nobody else that I've talked to has seen that.
Check my tweets. It's on my.
It was a random.
Yeah, it was a tweet. I put it on TwitPic, so it's up there. But I was like, what is that? Yes, I want. Click, yes.
They have to know that comes out.
Yeah, I would think so.
So that brings it, and the Chrome Web Store. I've tried out a few of them.
Yeah, I'll have to get on there and check it out.
A lot of people are upset because not a lot, but there are quite a few web apps, if you will, that are basically just a nice, pretty button that's a link to a website.
Hmm.
But there are some really cool web apps like TweetDeck for Chrome is really nice.
If you use Twitter.
If you're using Twitter. They also have Rocket Slide, which is a slide presentation builder, which is really using the browser features that has a lot of cool games and stuff. So,
does Chrome OS have Flash?
I would believe so.
That was another thing with the iPads, where the students were saying no Flash. That was a bummer. And leading in,
games.
Yeah, leading into the next item here, printing. With the iPad, they had not updated to 4.2, so they didn't have printing. So from an English teacher's perspective, she really missed the printing.
Oh, so sad.
Well, you know, they get used to grading the papers, and I understand that.
And that's been one of our comments from our teachers, is they like to hold the papers and physically write on them, which I'm not that type of person. I'd rather highlight and do a comment. And I just think it's a matter of changing your perspective on things.
Well, I think you know what we need. We need pen annotation in. I'm wondering if the Android tablets will have something like this, where if you're looking at a Google Doc, you can actually use a
annotate
right over the top of it,
it's
an overlay.
Browser, so I don't see why you can't do that.
Yeah. So anyway, that was just interesting. But that takes us into the next item that you put down here, which strangely enough has to do with Google. I don't know how this keeps happening. This is weird. I got to look at this because this is from an IT perspective, printing is one of those pain points that especially with printer drivers. I mean, when we were doing thin clients and terminal servers, It's always a problem, and you know, Citrix has universal drivers to deal with this, but I'm really curious to see how this is going to happen, what printers are going to be supported, because I got to imagine it's not going to be all printers.
Well, I'm wondering how it's going to work. I tried to install it and try to get it working, and I wasn't set up to do it. So
I mean, at this point, I just, you know, with email and being able to send documents, the only thing you should have to print for is if you got to sign something.
Yes, and if you can't do it electronically. And right. I saw somebody tweet that the other day, that they could not digitally sign on their iPad, which was making them really mad. Because, I mean, if you can digitally sign something, you're done.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just one of those things. I think we're so used to paper. I think in 10 years, this will, if we're still printing reams of paper in 10 years, I'm going to be surprised. Because we're really close. I mean, I think we're close with tablets. If everybody has tablets, you know, I think we're there.
It's a generational process, though. So it's going to take one or two generations.
Oh, man. I'm not waiting 30 years.
Well, but think about it.
I'll be old by then.
You and I are above the curve on that.
Yeah, that's true.
But we've grown up in the paper pen generation.
Yeah, that's true.
Our students are in the middle of a transition. The next group of students, the next generation, is going to be the possible digital generation. That's my thought.
You know, it's funny because I got a tweet from Chris Bell on Twitter, and I just commented on how difficult printing is to set up, and you know, he was, I think, in jest said, "Well, just make it hard to print, and they won't print anymore." But the customer service person in me wants to make it easy for them to print because they want to print. But I really, there's this internal conflict with, especially with our Linux netbooks, setting up printers for those are not standard, straightforward, not easy to do. And part of me wants to just say, you know what? You're going to be on a Linux netbook. You're not running Office. You're running Google Apps. You can share everything that you need to share. Do you really need to print? We're not there with the staff and all that. I mean, that would be a big discussion, and we definitely have some teachers that would absolutely 100% say they had to print. Yeah. But I'd really like to get to that point where that's not an issue, because it just removes one more layer of stuff that I have to worry about. And that's why I'm really intrigued by Chrome OS. And if this cloud print thing works, I mean, I'm not going to go out and buy all new printers, but it would be interesting to see it working with a classroom where, one, all our students, they just log into their Google Apps account directly through a Chrome OS notebook. That, I mean, how awesome would that be?
Well, and that, I mean, yeah, that would be awesome. I was going to say something else, but I don't want to worry about it. But
yeah, so, and then if they can cloud print, great. I don't have to maintain a print server anymore. And, you know, I a lot of this comes down to what I don't have to do anymore, but I see this. Everything that I don't have to manage from an IT perspective anymore allows me to spend more time focusing on how the technology is used in the class. So I'd much rather be doing that and concentrating on instructional technology and using technology in the class. And, you know, there's this big push for looking at data and all that stuff rather than trying to figure out why printers aren't printing.
Well, you know, and that same thing with iPads, the 4.2, you have to do a hack to get, to get actually to work on Windows, or if you're not using the HP printers. But there is a nice little script that you can run that you can print to any printer. But you have to have some type of print server.
I think we should wrap up. My cat is stepping on my cables.
Yeah.
Actually, she's just took a nap. And you lost video. What happened?
I am in the middle of... Oh, yeah, I think it just went off. There.
Yep.
Yeah, it's gone. Oh, well. So I guess that's another episode all finished up.
Wow, that was quick. Seems like it was quick.
And 54 minutes I have call time, so it's probably about a 35, 40 minute show.
Yeah, 20 minutes of audio support. Oh, wait, I'm supposed to say roll the music.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're done.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.
Let's see, I got nothing. Oh, I'm going to talk about my iPad visit.
I like that one. We'll save that for the end.
Yeah, right. That's probably the most important thing in this whole podcast. All the other stuff is just Google crap.
education.
One-to-one, transforming instruction.
I'm going to put this one on the bottom because it's not really that important. E-books could be educational.
No, you know what's cool about that? Because I watched a Kindle ad, and it said Kindle available on, and it listed all these devices, and then it said Mac and PC, and I'm like, crap, there's no Linux. What are we going to do? And we have not had a real good e-reader solution for...
We recording? You want to start?
Yeah, I'm recording. Maybe we should start.
Yeah, because if we're going to talk about stuff. Okay, episode 22, right? Okay.
Oh, man. Don't sit in a leather chair when you podcast.
Sweaty?
Making all kinds of noise. Oh. No. And then I got my cat here. I got so many cables here, it's unbelievable. I got to go back and check the audio. Hopefully my mic didn't die like halfway in.
Okay, well, I got to go get food and get ready for my episode.
Yep, sounds fun. All right.
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Later. Okay, testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. It's not. This is not. Testing. Okay. So my audio is there, but only when I touch. Great. Testing.
Did we lose half the soundtrack?
I don't know. Test.
Like me talking to nobody, huh?
Yeah, basically. Let me turn up. Oh, man, I hate this thing. I hate audio. Never want to do audio again.
You're not using SoundFlower,
testing,
though, right?
No, I'm trying to do it via hardware, but I think my mic...
Your Plantronics mic died?
Testing. It's like dropping in and out. Or it's consistent here, but all right. Well, we'll just see what we get.
All right. Well, we're almost done. I got to get going anyhow.
Yeah. All right. So.